This is VOA News via remote.
I'm Laurel Bowman. For the latest political talk in Washington, D.C. now, Democratic-led efforts to impeach U.S. President Donald Trump for a second time gained momentum this weekend, with lawmakers saying they'll introduce articles of impeachment next week. But key Republican Trump allies have urged Democrats to shelve any impeachment effort. Trump has just days left in office. President-elect Joe Biden, who takes office on January 20th, has not given an opinion, saying Congress should decide. These fresh calls for impeachment come after Trump rallied supporters on Wednesday, who then rushed the U.S. Capitol building. Five people were killed in the ensuing melee, and dozens have been charged. Trump initially praised his supporters, but later condemned their violence in a video. In addition to impeachment plans, Democratic U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has also asked lawmakers to draft legislation aimed at invoking the Constitution's 25th Amendment, which allows for stripping the powers from a president unable to fulfill the duties of the office. Mitch McConnell, the Republican Senate Majority Leader, has suggested any trial would likely occur after Trump's term ends. If found guilty after leaving office, Trump would lose benefits enjoyed by former presidents, such as security and pension, and the Senate could vote to bar him from running for a second term. Africa passed the milestone of 3 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 Sunday, including more than 72,000 deaths, according to the African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. South Africa is also battling a resurgence of the disease driven by a variant of the virus that is more contagious and spreading quickly. This is VOA News, and here are some of the other stories making headlines around the world today. A new coronavirus variant has been detected in four travelers from Brazil's Amazonas state. Japan's health ministry said on Sunday, in the latest instance, the pandemic virus is evolving. A ministry official said studies were underway into the efficacy of vaccines against the new variant, which differs from highly infectious variants first found in Britain and South Africa that have driven a surge in cases. Embattled Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko said constitutional reforms would be drawn up by the end of the year and then put to a national referendum. RIA news agency reported on Sunday, Belarus has been rocked by protests since an August 9th presidential election marred by voter fraud allegations. Lukashenko, in power since 1994, has rejected criticism while presiding over a sweeping crackdown in the ex-Soviet republic. The Spanish government sent convoys carrying the COVID-19 vaccine and food supplies on Sunday to areas cut off by Storm Filomena, which brought the heaviest snowfall in decades across central Spain and killed four people. In the Madrid area, rescuers reached 1,500 people trapped in cars, while police broke up a large snowball fight after authorities appealed for citizens to stay at home for risk of accidents or spreading coronavirus. The daily number of new coronavirus cases has doubled in China, prompting tougher movement restrictions, and in the capital, passengers must scan a health code before boarding a cab or ride-hailing car. Officials said on Sunday, mainland China reported 69 cases on January 9th, compared with 33 reported a day earlier, the country's national health authority said on Sunday. Proud of their national reputation for efficiency, Germans are growing increasingly frustrated by the slow rollout of a COVID-19 vaccine its scientists helped develop. Scarce vaccine supply, cumbersome paperwork, a lack of healthcare staff, and an aged and immobile population are hampering efforts to get early doses of a vaccine made by U.S.-based Pfizer and German partner BioNTech into the arms of the people. And Pope Francis urged Americans on Sunday to shun violence, seek reconciliation, and protect democratic values following that mob attack on the U.S. Capitol building by supporters of President Trump. I repeat that violence is self-destructive always. He said this in his Sunday address. Via remote, I'm Laurel Bowman, reporting from Washington for VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
Irrespective of your perception about Sowore and whatever you may want to say, he and others have participated in a protest. The question is, should that be criminal in a country like ours? And the answer is no.
Amnesty International demands the immediate release of former Nigerian presidential candidate Omoyele Sowore.
And we condemn this act of Boko Haram, and all measures will be taken with our vigilant committee, was walking day and night alongside our force to secure our population.
Cameroon says Boko Haram militants are behind the killing of at least 22 people, including four soldiers, Friday.
I depicted a place, you know, because I wanted to tell that story, but it's a global thing, and I feel like people should be aware of innocence of children that could be taken away, you know, but you know, at the end, they have to, you know, life goes on.
And an African film is under consideration for the 2021 Academy Awards. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Amnesty International is demanding the immediate release of former Nigerian presidential candidate Omoyele Sowore. The right group is also demanding charges against the opposition figure and four others be dropped. Among the charges Sowore and four others face, including criminal conspiracy, unlawful assembly, and an attempt to incite others. They were arrested on New Year's Eve following a protest calling for better governance, but the global rights organization condemned the arrest. It says the Constitution guarantees freedom of assembly and expression. Sheung Bakari is Amnesty International's programs manager for Nigeria. He tells me that his organization is appalled by the government use of tactics to frustrate the bail conditions of Sowore and the four others.
Amnesty International is deeply concerned that the authorities are employing delayed tactics in ensuring that Sowore and the four others who were arrested solely for expressing their rights to freedom of expression and freedom of assembly. The authorities are doing everything to ensure that they remain in detention and that they do not come out of that detention. And, of course, we've seen the delayed tactics in the guise of, for instance, the authorities failing to produce Sowore and four others for the continuation of their bail hearing, which was supposed to have taken place at an Abuja magistrate court on Friday. We understand that the police are citing the non-availability of operating vehicles to convey the detainees to court. And we definitely regard this as a deliberate attempt to keep them perpetually in illegal detention. So this is why we are worried. We are actually appalled by these delayed tactics, and we are calling on the authorities not only to release them, but to also drop all the charges against them, because we all should live in a country where expressing your right to freedom of expression and freedom of assembly should not earn you jail terms or illegal detention from the authorities.
Some are arguing that the government brought them to court and they are going through the process. Why don't Amnesty International just allow the process to continue and that their rights are not being violated and the demand for charges against them to be dropped are rather unfortunate and regrettable? What do you say to that?
We have seen this movie before. This is not the first time that the nation is witnessing a situation where people are arrested just because they maintain a different opinion, or they express a dissenting opinion. This is not the first time that people have been picked up for participating in a protest. And we are saying that constitutionally, Nigerians have the right to freely express themselves. The authorities are simply keeping them just to wear them out. This five activists have done absolutely nothing wrong beyond participating in a protest. And there's no rule that says that you cannot even participate in a protest in the midnight or at any time of the day. So there is no crime here as far as we are concerned. And we are saying that the authorities should drop charges against them, should release them, and should uphold and promote the right to freely express yourself in a country like ours.
But some people are saying that Sowore and some of his enablers sought to undermine the country's ability. In spite of everything that he's done, they should be aware that their actions, and he has also been charged before of trying to overthrow the administration. So why would he do something like that? That would, some argue, would create another legal obstacle for him, they say. What do you say to that?
Except if the constitution of the country, the provisions of the constitution of our country has changed. As long as the provisions of the constitution remain the same, the right to protest, the right to freely express yourself, cannot be criminalized. And what Sowore and others did was to participate in a protest. Protest is not a crime. We have said that again and again. Protest is not a crime. It doesn't matter how you view it. If we live in a society like ours that is run by the law, protest is not a crime. It is the attempt of the authorities to criminalize this that should be condemned by everyone. I mean, you may not like Sowore, and you don't have to like. You may not like activists who speak on behalf of others, who speak for the rights of others, and you don't have to like them. But what matters is that, do they have a right to participate in a protest? If the answer is yes, then that should not be criminalized in a society like ours. We are not governed by perceptions. We are governed by the law, and our constitution provides for you a right to freely express yourself. If you want to take part in a protest, as long as it is peaceful, then that should not be criminalized in any way. So irrespective of your perception about Sowore and whatever you may want to say, he and others have participated in a protest. The question is, should that be criminal in a country like ours? And the answer is no.
Seun Bakare is Amnesty International's Programs Manager for Nigeria. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Cameroon said Saturday that at least 22 people, including four soldiers, were killed in two Friday morning attacks, one by Boko Haram fighters on its northern border with Nigeria and the other by separatists fighting to create an independent English-speaking country in Cameroon's western regions. Officials warn of a new wave of violence and killing they say is being prepared by the separatists and Boko Haram terrorists. For VOA Moki, Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region, says there was general confusion in the town of Mozogu when militiamen warned civilians about Boko Haram suicide bombers from neighboring Nigeria in their midst. He said some scared people fled into the bush where they always go for safety, but many Nigerian suicide bombers were already hiding there. He said 11 civilians were killed on the spot when bombers detonated explosives. He said three were shot by the terrorist group in Mozogu, a town in Cameroon's Mayosava administrative unit.
Yesterday we got an attack of Boko Haram in Marichanaga division. 14 people died, and we had been instructed by the hierarchy to extend the message of condolence, and we condemn this act of Boko Haram, and all measures will be taken with our vigilant committee who was working day and night alongside our force to secure our population.
Bakari said the wounded were rushed to hospitals in Mozogu and the neighboring town of Mokolu. He said the military had been deployed in Mozogu to secure Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria's Borno State, an epicenter of Boko Haram activity. Cameroon government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi, in a release, said heavily armed Boko Haram fighters have infiltrated villages around Mozogo and called for vigilance. The release also says separatist fighters attacked a military post at Matazan at the western entrance to the English-speaking northwest region, killing 4 soldiers and 2 civilians. 2 civilians died while being rushed to hospitals. Among the survivors of the attack is 43-year-old trader Clarence Tata, who was driving from the English-speaking northwestern town of Bamenda to the coastal city of Douala. He says God saved his life from more than half an hour of crossfire.
I opened that door behind there and jumped out of the car. Then I rolled and came under the car. After the shooting lasted for around 30 to 40 minutes, I discovered that a bullet went through my chair and came out behind. God protected me. The Lord preserved me.
General Valenka, commander of the Cameroon military forces fighting the separatists, says his troops transported several wounded people to hospitals. He says physical damage was enormous. Nkar says civilians should help the military find the fighters by reporting suspects in their communities.
Le travail n'est pas terminé. Il y a encore,
he says the task ahead is still enormous because there are many rebel camps his troops must destroy. He says it is imperative for everyone to know that the military is there primarily to protect civilians. He says he is urging the population to collaborate with the military, which is doing everything possible to protect civilians and their goods and restore peace. Cameroon has been fighting to secure its northern border with Nigeria from Boko Haram incursions and combating separatist fighters in its English-speaking western regions. No one has claimed responsibility for the attacks in the northern town of Mozogu and the western locality of Matazan. The government, however, blames Boko Haram and separatist fighters for the separate attacks. The separatist crisis that is in its fourth year has killed over 3,000 people and displaced more than 500,000 others, according to the United Nations. Boko Haram terrorists have been fighting for 11 years to create an Islamic caliphate in northeast Nigeria. The fighting has spread to Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Benin. The United Nations says Boko Haram violence has cost the lives of 30,000 people and displaced about 2 million in Nigeria, Cameroon, Niger, and Chad. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Ugandan presidential candidate Robert Kyagulanyi Ssentamu has written to the International Criminal Court, or the ICC, asking it to probe alleged crimes against humanity committed by President Yoweri Museveni's government and security forces. Kyagulanyi, known as Bobi Wine, is a major challenger of Museveni in the race for presidency. He says Ugandan courts have failed to prosecute perpetrators of the crimes because they are under Museveni's grip. For VOA, Catherine Nambi reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
With only a few days until the January 14th general elections, Bobi Wine is calling on the International Criminal Court in The Hague to look at the arrests and alleged torture of opposition supporters and the killings of protesters in Uganda. The ICC defines crimes against humanity as offences that are committed as part of a widespread or systematic attack directed against any civilian population that can include murder, enslavement, deportation, forcible transfer of populations, imprisonment, torture, rape, and the persecution of any identifiable group, among others. Wine says if the court finds merit in the petition his lawyers are filing, it should institute a case against President Yoweri Museveni's government.
You all saw the November massacre when so many innocent Ugandans were murdered, and it is on record that they were murdered on the orders of General Museveni. Therefore, we shall stop at nothing to seek justice for these people. We want the International Criminal Court, when we succeed, to issue an arrest warrant to General Yoweri Kaguta Museveni and to his security minister, General Eddie Tumwine, and all the police and military officers that have committed and continue to commit crimes against humanity.
In November, more than 50 people were killed and scores injured during protests following Wine's arrest. Wine, the head of the National Unity Platform, NUP, is considered the leading challenger to Museveni in the election. A number of Wine's supporters and other opposition politicians have been arrested, which the party and rights groups say is meant to intimidate them into withdrawing them from the race. Wine says he has information that Ugandan security forces are planning to further curtail the freedoms of Ugandans during the elections. Indeed, the Inspector General of Police, Martin Okoth Ochola, has vowed to crush any unlawful protests before, during and after the elections.
We have a multi-layered security response of patrol groups on foot, motorcycles and patrol vehicles. We have practiced active drills on several scenarios, including violent riots, radical youth groups, cyber harassment, clashes between rival groups, and so on. I would like to assure the whole country that whoever foments trouble will regret why his or her mother gave birth to him or her. Whoever thinks will cause anarchy in this country will regret the consequences.
According to the Rome Statute, a case at the ICC can be initiated by the United Nations Security Council, a member state of the ICC, or the ICC itself through its prosecutor. ICC staff will examine any evidence petitioners supply before deciding if the court will pursue action. This is not the first petition that members of Uganda's opposition parties have initiated against government officials. Last year, former opposition presidential candidate Dr. Kizza Besigye petitioned the ICC over what he termed gross violations of people's rights by President Museveni. The court, however, ruled last month that the crimes alleged did not meet the standards for genocide. Wine and 10 other candidates are running against Museveni, who has been in office for more than 30 years. His critics and international rights organizations say Museveni's government has become increasingly repressive in the past several years, which the president denies. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
In South Sudan, local authorities in Lainya County of Central Equatoria say 3 civilians were killed and 4 others sustained injuries following clashes between cattle keepers from Terekeka County and cattle owners in Lainya. The former police commissioner of what was Ye River State says cattle keepers from Terekeka raided cattle from the host community, triggering the violence. For VOA, Daniel Friday Martin reports from Ye.
Local authorities say groups of cattle keepers who crossed over from Tali and Cobra in Terekeka County into Lanya County have been fighting each other in Lanya County over the past weeks. Major General Yowasa Lojan Kamba, former police commissioner for the now defunct Ye River State, says the well-armed cattle groups that are roaming through several villages of Lanya County started Thursday's violence. Lojang says local leaders are trying to prevent further violence. Simon Ladu, the paramount chief of Lanya County, says cattle keepers from Terekeka raided hundreds of cattle from the host community.
My local residents have been killed over no clear reasons. 2 big cattle camps with more than 700 cattle belonging to my local people have been raided, and I am calling on our state governor, Emmanuel Adil, to look into this issue with seriousness, because the problem of cattle raiding will not only affect Lanya County, but it will affect the whole Greater Yei.
Lado urged President Salva Kiir to enforce his order requiring cattle groups to relocate. He says hundreds of civilians displaced from Lokurbang village, where the fighting broke out, have sought refuge in Lanya town, and armed pastoralists continue to roam in farming communities. Lawmaker Dosman Joyce, who represents Lanya County in the National Assembly, urged the national government to intervene.
My citizens are not in peace. Now these Mundaris have gone here in thousand cows. As I'm talking now, there are almost 3,000 cows there. I'm calling the government to intervene in this situation because it's really bringing insecurity to our people again. These people need to be stopped in shooting and killing people, and then these people immediately has to evacuate from the area where they are.
Wani Buyu, acting chairman of the Mondari community, urges cattle headers from Terekeka and the local community in Lanya to peacefully resolve their differences.
I'm appealing to my people. They are in Lanya. They should really live in the peaceful coexistence with the people of Lanya. What they should know is that that is not their area. They should seek, ask the people to give them a place where there are no people residing in it, so that they don't interfere with the local people, especially with their agricultural land.
Buyu says cattle headers who fled Terekeka County due to flooding are in search of green pastures for their animals in Central Equatoria State. George Lemery Leon, acting secretary for the now defunct Yei River State, condemned the incident and urged the parties not to take the law into their hands.
It is a conflict that has brought in the cattle herders from Terkeke and then the few cattle herders also in Lanya and farmers together. However, don't go into conflict. Report to the administration so that whatever happens in your area is handled within the context of the law. The laws of the country are working. The government is there in place.
Earlier this week, religious leaders in Central Equatoria's internal province told South Sudan in Focus that continued fighting in Terekeka and Lanya counties is hampering efforts by church leaders to bring the parties together to peacefully resolve their issues. For VOA News, I am Daniel Friday Martin.
Violence surrounding last month's Central African Republic election has sent tens of thousands of people fleeing to neighboring countries and safer areas within the CAR, the UN Refugee Agency said Friday. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
More than 30,000 refugees are estimated to have fled to neighboring Cameroon, Chad, Democratic Republic of Congo, and the Republic of Congo since December 27th. The UN Refugee Agency says the violence and insecurity related to the general election has displaced tens of thousands more people inside the Central African Republic. The four other countries already are hosting hundreds of thousands of refugees from the CAR and other conflict countries. UNHCR spokesman Boris Cheshirkov says the new influx of refugees is placing a huge strain on local resources.
Most arrivals are staying with host communities or in makeshift shelters. They urgently need water, shelter, access to health, and adequate sanitation to prevent the spread of COVID-19 and other diseases. We are working closely with national and local authorities and humanitarian partners to support some of the most vulnerable.
The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says 185,000 people from more than two dozen locations inside CAR have fled into the bush and forest since December 15th. Cheshirkov says most have abandoned their homes in the face of surging pre-election violence, while 113,000 since have returned home. He says an estimated 62,000 are still displaced.
We are concerned about reports of human rights violations taking place inside CAR, and we urge governments in all neighboring countries to continue granting access to asylum and supporting local authorities to register the new arrivals.
The UNHCR is helping governments register new arrivals, and UN aid agencies are providing food, health, and other relief. After many years in exile, the voluntary repatriation of Central African Republican refugees from Cameroon and the Democratic Republic of the Congo had restarted in November. Given the current post-election upheaval, Cheshirkov says this operation now has been put on hold. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. But first, many world leaders have expressed shock and dismay at the riot in Washington Wednesday that resulted in at least four deaths and dozens of arrests. Supporters of U.S. President Donald Trump marched on Capitol Hill after Trump called for protests against the victory of his rival Joe Biden in November's election. U.S. courts have repeatedly rejected Trump's claim that the vote was rigged. For viewing, Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
European allies watched with dismay as the violence unfolded at the U.S. Capitol Wednesday.
What happened today in Washington, D.C. is not America.
Diese Demokratie wird sich als viel stärker erweisen als die Angreifer und Randalierer.
On Twitter, Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson called the violence disgraceful. His Interior Minister Priti Patel blamed President Donald Trump.
His comments directly led to the violence, and so far he's failed to condemn that violence, and that is completely wrong.
NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg tweeted, "Shocking scenes in Washington, D.C. The outcome of this democratic election must be respected." A spokesman for the United Nations Secretary General said, "It is important that political leaders impress on their followers the need to refrain from violence." Israel's leader expressed support for his country's chief ally.
"American democracy has always inspired me. Lawlessness and violence are the opposite of the values we know Americans and Israelis cherish."
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi wrote on Twitter, "The democratic process cannot be allowed to be subverted through unlawful protests." Meanwhile, U.S. rivals taunted Washington. In a televised speech, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said it showed how fragile and vulnerable Western democracy is. In a statement, Venezuela said the United States is suffering the same thing that it has generated in other countries with its policies of aggression. China attempted to twist the narrative. Moscow's deputy UN ambassador Dmitry Polyansky compared the violence to the 2014 revolution in Ukraine, writing on Twitter, "Quite Maidan-style pictures are coming from D.C." U.S. allies share the pain of many Americans watching the violence at the heart of its democracy. Many foes are using the events as an opportunity to settle scores. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Anthony Inti is a Ghanaian filmmaker based in Belgium. He is the African director of the award-winning film De Yeh. He says the film, which won a student award, is also being considered for the 2021 Academy Awards. De Yeh shows two Ghanaian children who are taken on a life-changing trip by a stranger. Inti says the film is an intense day trip in sunny Ghana that endangers the innocence of the children. Reports in Belgium say the film has collected four Oscar-qualifying grand prizes. To learn more about the film, I reach Anthony Inti in the Belgium capital, Brussels.
I grew up in Ghana until my 10th, and then I came to Belgium. I remember, you know, being at home and had to take care of things, and then I got, you know, your friend comes to ask you, "Do you want to come play football?" And like, man, I got to stay home, and then you end up going. And then you know, coming home and then dodging a hit from my auntie. And I run back to the football field. And then that was a starting point for me, for the story, actually. Because then later, you know, I was at a place where, you know, I was, you know, I got out of the place safe and stuff. But, you know, I came across, let's say, things that could have been in my disadvantage. But as a kid, I never really understood what was happening. And then I wanted to tell a story about that. But, you know, I wanted to tell it in a very visually interesting way, cinematic way, and make it feel like this road movie that becomes, you know, very tense, but it's light and poetic, and that became that year.
What do you think is the motivation behind this movie? What, why do you think that, oh, this thing is important to document it and to make it into a movie that will attract global attention?
For me, I mean, the thing is, like, you know, I'm a filmmaker, so using my art to tell something is a motivation. And for me, I remember that situation as a kid. I didn't understand it. Like, I was naive, but later I'm like, wow. If I can make something that can bring tension from the audience, so let's say the grown up, and even kids that seen it, they feel the tension. It could maybe start a conversation.
What went into the filmmaking itself, and how were you able to successfully make it happen in terms of how you want to actualize and bring into life your vision and your motivation?
Tell it, wow, it was not easy. Like, it's actually my graduation film. And in my first year, I was in Ghana, and I shot a film also called Kweku. And so, and I had that idea actually back in 2015 to do that year. But everybody said it was too ambitious. And then I did another film where it did pretty okay at festival. So I thought, okay, now I can maybe do that year. You know, people will finance it and help me out. But then once I went knocking on the door, everybody wasn't sure. They were like, yeah, we don't know. It's maybe too edgy. And so there was this production company that said they were going to help. And then last minute, they backed out. But for me, I spoke with my dad, my mom, and I was like, I just want to tell this story. And, you know, I have to find a way. So I was just working at the Pizza Hut, you know, doing deliveries. I did some video clips, some commercials. I really worked together with my partner, Chingis Karibekov, who also produced it. And then we collected some money, and we called up a camera guy that I always work with, PJ Classes, and a sound guy, Vincent, and then the actor, the Boga.
What do you think should be the major takeaways of this movie?
For me, there are a few stages, you know. One is just to acknowledge talent, our talent, because, like, for instance, the kids are, you know, Matilda and Prince, they had never acted before, and they were, like, for me, amazing. So when it comes to the talent as actors, I want people to, you know, every time when they get a prize and they get awarded, it warms my heart, because that comes first, you know, the art, and they were amazing. And also, you know, second is that, you know, our stories and our stories being told in, you know, in back home, and how we tell them, and that we have a voice. And then for me, it's just like, you know, not forgetting that, you know, innocence of children could come into danger when crossed with the adulthood. But that's in general, you know. I depicted a place, you know, because I wanted to tell that story, but it's a global thing, and I feel like people should be aware of you know, like, you know, innocence of children that could be taken away, you know, but, you know, at the end, they have to, you know, life goes on.
Anthony Nti is a Ghanaian filmmaker based in Belgium. He spoke with me from the capital, Brussels. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas in Puga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Let's start with the Confederation of African Football Champions League. The draw for the 2020-2021 CAF Champions League group stage was done at CAF headquarters in Cairo on Friday. Last season's title holders, Al Ahly of Egypt, will face AS Vita of DR Congo, Simba Sports Club of Tanzania, and El Merrikh of Sudan in Group A. In Group B, TP Mazembe of DR Congo, Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa, El Hilal of Sudan, and Belzdad of Algeria. Group C has Wydad Casablanca of Morocco, Horoya of Guinea, Petro Atlantico of Angola, and Kaiser Chiefs of South Africa. And Group D is Esperance of Tunisia, Zamalek of Egypt, MC Alger of Algeria, and Tangwith of Senegal. The group stage kicks off in mid-February and concludes at the beginning of April 2021. Also on Friday, the draw for the 2020-2021 CAF Confederation Cup additional second round was done in Cairo. The draw paired the sides qualifying from Confederation Cup second plenary round against sides relegated from the same round of the CAF Champions League for a place in the group stage. Meanwhile, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, has ruled that just two of the five candidates for March's presidential elections are eligible so far, with President Ahmed not among them. The Malagasy has been declared ineligible given his five-year FIFA ban, although his camp has slim hopes as an ongoing appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport would change this. So far, both Ivory Coast football president Jacques Anoma and current Senegal FA president Augustin Senghor have been authorized to contest the March elections in Morocco. Further checks are required before either Mauritanian FA president Ahmed Yahia and Patrice Motsepe, the South African who owns Mamelodi Sundowns, can be added to the list of candidates. The elections determine who will lead CAF are set to be held on March 12th in the Moroccan capital, Rabat. And in athletics, Olympic long jump silver medalist Louvé Manyonga has been provisionally suspended for three breaches of anti-doping rules in 12 months. The 30-year-old South African, who has battled drug addiction in the past, could be banned for 2 years for the whereabouts failures. The delayed Tokyo 2020 Olympics are scheduled to start on July 23, 2021. Manyonga is among the favorites to win gold in Tokyo after winning the 2017 World and 2018 Commonwealth titles. In 2012, Manyonga was banned from athletics for 18 months after testing positive for crystal meth. Under World Athletics anti-doping rules, any combination of three whereabouts failures within 12 months is a violation. If Manyonga accepts the ruling, the Athletics Integrity Unit could issue the maximum sanction of a 2-year ban. He could also appeal. In May 2020, Manyonga was fined for public drinking and contravening South Africa's strict lockdown restrictions. And Tunisia's National Olympic Committee has banned the president of the country's football federation, Nadi Jerry, for 4 years. In a statement, the committee said Jerry had breached national and international Olympic ethics codes. The committee will now be sending any complaints against Jerry to both the IOC and FIFA. Jerry has governed the Tunisian Football Federation since 2012. He's hoping to become a member of the executive committee of CAF when elections take place in March. For now, it's not clear how the ban will affect his candidacy. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
You know what's fire. airport. Just to get her me and I stay out. This and the plan and the layout. Sandrine come in to you stay out. If you take my face, me I go way out. If you're in a party, I lost me, I go way out. I will never treat you bad, girl. I will never make you mad, girl. You are the one who are without, girl. If me not get you, me I go sad, girl.
You know me hot, I'm strong, I'm sad, I'm young. You know me everything. You know me hot, I'm strong, I'm sad, I'm young. Baby, girl, now you are mine. You know me young, baby, I want you, now me young. You know me young, baby, I want you, now me young. Now you are one. Now you are one. Now you are one. Now you are one. Baby, now you are one. Now you are one. Now you are one. Now you are one. Baby, now you are one. Now you are one. Now you are one. Now you are one. Baby, now you are one. Now you are one. Baby, now you are one. Now you are one. Baby, now you are one.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here, the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Shaka Sali, Reporter Douglas Impuga, and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, there's nothing like bad patience. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.